Well, ahoy there, vinyl record collectors. Do you know about Seems Easy record jacket repair strips? Seems Easy are a super easy way to repair seam splits in record sleeves. Check them out over at seamseasy.com. Grab a 10, 25, or even 100 pack of Seems Easy record jacket repair strips. And record dealers and shops, you're going to probably want a bunch of these on hand for your incoming used record stock. Fix up any seam split quick and easy with the Seems Easy record jacket repair strips. There's a video at seamseasy.com. That's with two Z's, seamseasy.com. Seems easy? It sure do. And also in your vinyl maintenance tool belt, you will need a Groove Washer record cleaning kit. The Groove Washer makes sure your vinyl sounds its very best. Head over to groovewasher.com, use discount code VINYLGUIDE10, and get a great deal on the best record cleaner this side of Saturn. Groove Washer's G2 cleaning fluid gets deep into the record grooves, removes the grime, and makes your listening experience the best it can be. That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10. Go there now. And with that, let's start this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide.
Hey guys, how you doing? This is Pepper Keenan. I play guitar and sing in a band called Corrosion of Conformity, and sometimes play guitar in a band called Down. You're listening to The Vinyl Guide.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Well, hey, 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 everyone. It's Nate, host of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. There's that theme music again. By the way, I've had some questions on The Vinyl Guide theme music, and just to be clear, I'm not that attached to it. It's all right, but look, if you're a musician, you want to take a crack at writing something and making it a theme song of sorts for The Vinyl Guide, please do it. Go on and start creating and let me know. Do not send me MP3s. Just send me a link to the track. I'd be happy to hear what you got. And we'll see. Maybe we'll get a new Vinyl Guide theme song. Who knows? Anyway, god dang, it is a hot day here in Sydney. Literally, while I mix this audio, it is 46 degrees Celsius. Or for you folks that still measure stuff in Fahrenheit, that's 114 degrees. I am indoors, I've got the AC going, and I'm still exhausted. But look, it's a great excuse to spend the day next to the record player or yabbering on to you guys. So I hope you're well, and I hope you're going to enjoy today's episode. It is a great one. Now, this week on The Vinyl Guide, I am very proud to share that our special guest is Pepper Keenan of Corrosion of Conformity, a band that I have tracked on my radar since the early 90s, and they still maintain a rather consistent presence in the soundtrack of my life. They are quite awesome, and today Pepper is going to talk to us about his time in Corrosion of Conformity. He'll also be sharing quite a bit about his wonderful side project, Down, which I think most of you may be familiar with as well. He's going to talk about the process of making music, making records, collecting vinyl, his personal vinyl collection, heaps more. Pepper and I are also going to talk about Australia a bit. Corrosion of Conformity are coming down here for much of the month of February, starting actually in New Zealand. First show is in Auckland, then over to Adelaide, then off to Perth, then Melbourne, Brisbane, and Sydney. And just to note, I'm going to be at the Sydney show at the Crowbar in Leichhardt, so any listeners there, DM me on Instagram or Twitter, and we'll have a beer together. Please do. I look forward to it. Tickets for Corrosion of Conformity, all the gigs can be found at silverbacktouring.com.au. These are going to be killer shows, so if you are in distance of one of these shows, make sure you don't miss it. Now, before you start, there are two things you need to know about this interview. Three, actually. Number one, it's clear that Pepper needs a new phone or a shorter beard. Gets a little garbled here or there, but I stretched my audio manipulating wizardry to make it as comfortable sounding as possible. Item number two you need to know, this interview was done only a few days before the death of longtime Corrosion of Conformity drummer Reed Mullen. We actually talk a little bit about Reed in that Dave Grohl was a big fan of Reed's drumming, but of course, Nobody expected Reed to pass, so there's no discussion of his passing in today's interview. And number three, we also discussed the status of the Australian bushfires, which at the time of the interview seemed to be getting under control. However, now, on one of the hottest days of the season so far, we are reminded that the fires keep burning. So you can help the Australian bushfires by donating to various Australian fire charities, or you could sign up to our Patreon page, patreon.com/vinylguide. I'm giving every damn dime we raise at patreon.com/vinylguide to the Australian fire victims and charities. Up there, you'll have access to exclusive show content, secret episodes, early access to Vinyl Guide episodes, extended interviews, and more. Plus, you'll be donating to the Australian bushfire charities. That's patreon.com/vinylguide, and thanks in advance for your support. And with that, let's get into the Vinyl Guide interview with Pepper Keenan of Corrosion of Conformity. On the Vinyl Guide, it is Pepper Keenan of Corrosion of Conformity, Down, and a few other projects here and there. And Pepper, I got to tell you, man, I'm so happy to see you touring back with Corrosion on so many bills and festivals. It seems like Corrosion of Conformity is finally getting its due.
We've been banging at it for a couple of years now. You know, we put the record out, I guess, I don't even know, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, we've been playing shows. We just got back together. Like I told some other people, I quit trying to figure out this rock and roll business bullshit. You know, it's just timing, man. And I had some downtime, and they were free, and we started talking. So we went to Europe and played some shows just to see what was out there, get our feet wet. And it just kept spiraling from there. And we were playing and getting better, and the crowds were coming out, and then some people brought us to some festivals. And, you know, we didn't have a record label. We didn't have management. We didn't have anything. We ended up having a blast, man. And then we played enough shows around where we started to get the attention from some record labels, and Nuclear Blast gave us a call saying they were interested in giving us a deal, and it was a great deal. We didn't even think about going anywhere else, and they gave us the freedom and the time and the moolah to make the record we wanted to and not put any pressure on us, which was great.
Everything you want.
Yeah, I was like, well, shit, that was easy, you know? So we buckled down and made the record we wanted to make that we felt was where we were at, and it just kind of ran from there, man.
Now, this new LP, well, I'm going to call it your latest LP, I say, No Cross, sure. No Crown. What does this add to the COC story?
Well, you know, the last record I did was In the Arms of God, and that album was one of the strongest records I think I had ever done. I was really proud of it. But we got cut short on that one, man, because a lot of people don't know this, but we were supposed to go on tour with Motorhead in Europe when that record came out. We have COC and Motorhead, 2.5 months in Europe. I mean, the slamming its opening slot you could possibly want for a band. And we were all psyched. We practiced, ready to go. I lived in New Orleans at the time, and we were on the way. 3 days prior, a little thing called Hurricane Katrina came through New Orleans and took it out. And that's where I live. And so it was a big freaking mess. So I had to call Lemmy, and I actually called him from a payphone booth in the middle of nowhere on the Texas border after evacuating to let him know that there just was no way I could do the tour. You know, and he understood that. His only question, he was watching on the news, the only question he asked me is if I needed any weapons. He had some biker buddies in Texas that could give me some weapons. I was like, no, brother, I'll be all right. You know.
But it's good to have someone like that on your side. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, the Lemmy was on my side, but I felt terrible. We never canceled a tour in our lives, ever. There was just no way. You know, I had to locate relatives still and find people and blah, blah, blah. So that put a big squeeze on everything, you know. So I was thankful to have the opportunity. And basically what I was getting to is that the book was not finished yet, if that makes any sense. So I was kind of pissed at the world for the situation that we were thrown in, but a lot of people had it a lot worse than I did, and I'm thankful for where I'm at now.
But to have the opportunity to get back together and to have a record label of the caliber of Nuclear Blast give us a deal and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's all just lined up, man. Mm. So we did the best we could do on No Cross, No Crown. We're super psyched to do it. And we got to zigzag all over the world again.
In terms of the album, I mean, the music is just fantastic. The artwork, it shows it battered like an old record. So you guys come from the vinyl era. Do you still play vinyl?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Mm-hmm. When I was designing the artwork, my buddy Vance Kelly, we worked a lot together. And we played the record for him and we were listening to it. I said, dude, it's got to look like it sounds. You know, so we put a lot of effort into the patinaed look of it or whatever. I just like the feel of those things, you know. Yeah. And then Nuclear Blast loved it, and they put it on double vinyl, which was super cool, you know. So, yeah, I mean, you put that sucker on, it sounds like it looks, you know.
Now, our audience here is a bunch of vinyl maniacs. We love vinyl and listening to our music on record.
Me too.
What are your early memories of records? What were the records you had as a kid? What were the ones that you listened to and collected?
The first record I ever got, when I was a kid, I belonged to this weird little club called Valencia. And it was had a swimming pool, like a neighborhood area where you could take, your parents could drop your kids off at this place. Anyway, they had a log that ran across the swimming pool. And so we used to have fights on top of this log. And whoever won the most fights on this thing got a gift certificate to the local record store in New Orleans called Leisure Landing. So I was like 9 years old and I won this fucking, you know, gift certificate to the record store. So I went down to the record, rode my bike over to Leisure Landing, you know, this gift certificate. And I didn't know much, you know, but I looked for the coolest looking album covers. And I bought Ramones' Road to Ruin and Led Zeppelin, Houses of the Holy.
Man, what a selection.
So I kind of went from there. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm kind of halfway between Led Zeppelin and the Ramones, I guess.
Not much has changed. So, I mean, something must have led you to those records. Was it just the covers, or did you have...
It was the artwork. Absolutely, 100%. It was the artwork. You know, Road to Ruin had that cartoon cover that just, you know, clearly catch the attention of a nine-year-old kid. And then the mysticism of the damn House of the Holy with the paper binding around it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I got lucky as shit on that.
Now, what music or what artist do you credit as kind of putting you on the road to becoming the man and the musician you are?
Oh, shoot, man. There's so many of them. In a nutshell, not that I was ever close to it, but I would say AC/DC. Just because I was an Angus Young freak. I still play Gibson SG this day because of Angus Young, so I thought it was so cool. And I always realized, you know, once you started playing a Gibson SG, it's really hard to bullshit on one of them, you know?
They're pretty unforgiving, yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta know
what you put into it, what you get back, yeah. So that was one of my things. AC/DC is a pretty big band that, you know, then we ran into Black Sabbath and all that shit, and it changed from there. But yeah, man, I'm just grateful to be able to play today. But.
Yeah. Now, I understand your first guitar you had was from a friend who had died. Is that story?
Yeah,
kind?
Yeah. Pat the Rat. That's correct. We were pretty tight when we were kids, and he had gotten in a motorcycle accident and was killed. And after the funeral, a couple of days later, I snuck back into his house and took his guitar out of his room and started playing it.
Okay.
I figured it'd be better if I had it than his mom, just letting it sit there, you know, spray painted it black, started playing Ramon songs on it.
So in a way, your career is a bit of a tribute to Pat the Rat.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't have gotten into the guitar, or at least gotten into it that early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My dad was a guitar player, but I didn't live with him at the time.
And not too many years later, you joined Corrosion of Conformity. They'd already had some initial success, but their sound was changing.
Mm-hmm.
What was happening with the band that led to that change in direction?
I had a good friend in New Orleans, and she was from North Carolina, and COC was from North Carolina. And they had put the word out that they were looking for a singer. And I was in a band in New Orleans, and I knew the COC guys. And Eva, the girl who knew them in Raleigh, suggested me. So I went up there quite some time ago, and you know, we hung out for a long time, and we were jamming, working some demos and stuff, and then, you know, they knew I played guitar as well. And, we were, you know, the whole hardcore scene and everything back then was getting kind of stale, you know, and everybody was kind of going in circles. I mean, you had some outbreak bands that I still love today, like the Cro-Mags and stuff. But other than that, we were kind of heading in a different direction, you know. It was kind of before grunge and all that shit, but we were hardcore kids listening to Skynyrd and Black Sabbath, you know, and we had the skills of the hardcore thing, but now we were starting to lean towards more slipperier blues-based kind of songs a little bit, you know. This is in the Blind record. I mean, this is, doesn't sound like it's there yet, but it was starting to lean that way. And then we suggested maybe I play guitar too, you know. So we had two guitar players, which turned into a whole different animal. You know, you didn't have too many two guitar bands like that in the hardcore kind of thing. Right. You know, so it just started branching out, and we were just exploring, you know, and trying to be open minded, and we were listening to all kind of different music and not really listening to the hardcore stuff anymore.
Now, Blind. That was my entry point for the band, and then it kind of went both directions from there. That was released in 91, about a month after Nirvana Nevermind, which really changed the sound of radio, right. Much closer to where Corrosion was at. Did Nirvana have an impact on the reception of Blind?
We were tight, you know. I knew Kurt, you know, and Dave Grohl was from a band in Virginia right up the road. You know, so we knew him from back in the day, and he got the job for Nirvana. He was stoked. He credited Reed Mullen for help ripping off his drum style and shit like that. You know, the small world back then.
Right.
But yeah, we were just doing our thing, and a lot of people don't know this, but I did that entire record in a wheelchair. I had broken my hip and my femur bone about a month before we started recording that record. So if you look at the picture in there, it's in a teeny tiny hotel room, but there's a crutch leaning against the wall. That was mine. I had broken my femur bone and my pelvis. So yeah, the entire record recording of that, I was playing on my opposite leg sitting down.
Okay.
It was brutal.
They had to
really brutal.
Prop you up in the vocal booth. Well, actually, vocal is the only track you were doing vocally.
I only sang Vote with a Bullet. Correct. I sang Vote with a Bullet.
Yeah. And that was really was it a surprise that was the hit? Or
I mean, I knew it was a good song. We were like, whoa, this is pretty damn cool. You know, it was different.
It was special
compared to what else was out there. It was a different thing, you know. Excuse me. It was like closer to, like I remember Al Jorgensen from Ministry commenting on that song. Mm-hmm. You know, it was before all, it was before Ministry, you know.
Yeah, had that distorted vocals, the different, yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah, just super syncopated, you know, I guess, whatever, I don't even know what the word is.
Yeah.
Pre-9 Inch Nails kind of, you know.
And it's, I imagine it's still a centerpiece of the Corrosion live set.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, I don't think we've ever done a set without playing that song.
Yeah. Going into the kind of the vinyl nerddom here, Blind, mm-hmm. the original pressing is near impossible to get. Even recent reissues are going for like 80 or 100 bucks. What
yeah,
with the deal?
I don't have it on vinyl.
With Nuclear Blast, are they able to go into the back catalog yet?
We have tried. We have tried. Every label's on a different. Every record's on a fucking different label with COC. Right. You know, and we have tried Nuclear Blast. Really wanted to get. I'd love to have them all under one umbrella and release them as a box or something. You know, it would be fucking awesome. And do quality pressings of them. You can find them. There's some out there. Some label called Black Something has licensed them and repressed. Like you can get all of them just about, but they're not the most quality things, you know.
I imagine they don't come from the original master tapes. They're probably a
no,
CD repress.
Yes, correct. We have the fucking master tapes.
You do.
I would love to get in there and remix some of these things, just a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you know about the 30-year rule that a lot of musicians are taking back the rights of their music after 30 years. So, Blind is coming up
Yeah, you might be right on that. I might need to be snooping around.
You might get yourself okay, a lawyer.
Yeah. Tell Monty Connor from Nuclear Blast to start sniffing around. I'm sure they could be licensed. I don't know. It's just that whole thing is so weird to me. I don't think, somebody can just license Deliverance from Sony, Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how it works. I'm not, that ain't my forte, but.
Well, as I understand it, a typical contract back in the day would allow the rights of the music to revert back to the artist after a period, and that mm-hmm. period is generally 30 years. So Blind mm-hmm. is coming up. It's year 29
right.
on that. So
right. One more year, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So I guess we just got to be patient, and then you'll get. But all the master tapes, all the master tapes of Blind, Deliverance, Wiseblood, they're all safe with you guys.
Not all of them, but we've done a couple of them ourselves. So yes, we have the tapes.
Now let's talk a little bit about Down, because you had this other project Down going in parallel here. How did the concept of Down develop?
It was basically Phil's idea. He was in Pantera, I was in COC, Kirk was in Crowbar, Jimmy was in I Hate God, and we all knew each other growing up, and we had all started and joined different bands, and we were all somewhat successful, but we were all from like a 4-mile radius, and it was a really weird thing, and we would all come home for like Christmas and shit, and we'd see each other, and Phil was like, dude, we should just start a band, start jamming. And we always hung out. All we did was drink beer and listen to music, Mm-hmm. We're like, fuck it. Let's just start, So me and Phil started talking about it. He came with the name Down. And I thought it was brilliant. And I designed the logo and the Jesus head and all that shit. And we did a bunch of demos and we were off to the races. And we basically said, let's just start a band that we would like if we weren't in it.
Now, these are the days of tape trading. And from what I understand, you guys took advantage of that culture of trading tapes to get the band
Absolutely.
Name out there. How did that work?
So we would make these demos, and we were, Phil and I were collecting a lot of tape traded stuff. And then Phil would go on tour Pantera, I'd go on tour COC, and I would, we'd take tapes with kids and tell people about this band Down. We didn't tell anybody we were in it. So that was the fun part of it. Dude, you gotta check this band Down out. Mm-hmm. And people would shit. We'd let them dub it or whatever. And, I knew the shit was real because I was in Sweden one time and this kid from Sweden came up to me asking me if I'd ever heard this cassette by a band called Down. I was like, yeah. So we were convinced that the underground was alive and well, The kid came to me, you could barely discern it. It had been overdubbed so many, it had been dubbed so many times.
At what point did you guys reveal who the members of Down were?
We the first time we played a live show, mm-hmm. Once we did 3 demo tapes and each one had 3 songs on it. And we would just do them like every year or so. So over the course of 3 years, we had 9 songs and 3 different tapes and people were onto it and they were listening to it. And people were, I'd seen people with like homemade shirts that said Down on them, we played a show in New Orleans one time, opening for Gwar. Mm-hmm. Once we did that, everybody was like, son of a bitch, it's you guys.
And I imagine you guys were signed within 24 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Did the success of Down surprise you at all? I mean, it's, that first album especially is just still so legendary.
Yeah. That record came out 25 years ago this year.
Now, is Down done? Do you think we'll see more Down in the future?
Well, we're scheduled to play some big festivals in Europe this summer. I'd like to do some more stuff, I mean, the band is brilliant. When we would play live, it was really something. It was pretty powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. People liked it. Everybody's just so damn busy.
I was lucky enough to catch you guys live in Sydney on Heaven and Hell's tour. That was, I think, Ronnie Dio's last tour.
That was one of my tours of all time.
Yeah. Tell us about what it was like touring with Ronnie and really Black Sabbath.
Yeah. Clearly, I was always a Sabbath Dio fanatic. I think Mob Rules is one of the most brilliant records ever fucking made, personally. Yeah. We had the opportunity, it was that simple. We said, dude, we'd love to open for you guys. And poof, a week later it happened. And we were shitting on ourselves, man. Like, holy fuck, we're flying to Australia to open for fucking Sabbath. And we were so psyched. And, you know, I used to go to a record store in Melbourne called Vicious Sloth.
Ooh, it's still there, yep.
You know that record?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, I go there and get all these fucking crazy Australian bands like Buffalo and shit like that. Mm-hmm. But when we came to Australia, we fucking, me and Phil made our intro music before we came on, we had like 20 minutes to play music. So we were playing all these prog rock Australian bands before we came on. And that was really fun. But the coolest thing about it was being in Australia and we're playing in these, you know, mini arena things or whatever. And me and Jimmy Barrow, the drummer for Down, could go anywhere the fuck we want to. So Tony Iommi's sound checking on stage. Nobody's in the whole damn arena. And it's me and Jimmy Barrow watching the dude sound check by himself walking around. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was worth everything I beat my head against the wall my entire life to get to. That was worth it, standing right there, you know. And that was a sound check, you know, because he's hitting riffs out just walking around. He's going battle that dang, doodle that dang, just walking around, and just like Jesus Christ. And we watched him every fucking night. And Dio was a fucking badass. Couldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole.
I'd seen Dio probably half a dozen, 10 times in my life. And that last tour, his voice was the strongest I'd ever heard.
Absolutely stunning.
So you're getting ready to come back to Australia, and I do want to talk about that. Before we do, what is your music collection like? If we were to walk into the Pepper Keenan home, what sort of records do you have? Is it big? Is it a lot of vinyl? What's it consist of?
I'm going to walk over. I'm standing and sitting in front of him right now. I'll go through a couple of them. I'm just going to grab a random pile. They're everywhere.
All right.
I got Glen Campbell's Greatest Hits. I just bought that 2 days ago. I got The Skull. I've got, let's see, somebody gave me COC, America's Volume Dealer, on vinyl. I just got that.
I didn't think that was ever released. That's strange.
Yeah, somebody did a really good version of it, too. And the label is called Back on Black.
Okay.
It's double vinyl. It's thick. Right. Sounds great. And then next to me, right next to that, is something I found digging around the other day, which is really fucking cool. It's the Down remastered NOLA record. This is the test pressings. So I have the Down NOLA test pressings, and they were remastered at Abbey Road.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. So I've got these massively thick Down NOLA test pressings that don't say anything on them. It just says Down NOLA Abbey Road Remaster in Sharpie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have your neighbors had an opportunity to enjoy them yet?
Oh, yeah.
So when you travel around, I mean, you know Vicious Sloth in Melbourne. Do you go to different record shops? Are you kind of, that's how you spend your days when you tour?
No, not always, but sometimes I'll get lucky. I find most of my shit at really crappy thrift stores that people don't know what they got. Mm. By the time it gets to a record store, it's already jacked up too much for me.
Right.
I got Gordon Lightfoot. I got Rare Hendrix. I got freaking Purple Rain. This is one of my favorite records. Cat Stevens, T for the Tiller Man. Mm-hmm. I'm just going down the list here. This is just a random pile of records.
Yeah.
I'm not very organized in these things. They're not any out.
Do you have any records there that are like super precious to you? Ones that are like, you know, that connect you to your youth? Ones that you've had your entire life?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I got one of them signed by AC/DC. I got Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap, the original Australian version. Ooh. With the dog pissing on the fucking thing.
Nice. Did you pick that up in Australia?
Huh? I did.
Excellent.
I got it at Vicious Sloth.
Those are good guys down there. Do you? Is there anything you're looking for? Is there anything that you were always hoping to add to the Pepper Keenan collection?
I'm trying to find the first Captain Beyond record. Captain Beyond was like a crazy prog rock band in the U.S.
All right.
And they were signed to Capricorn Records, the Allman Brothers label.
All right.
But yeah, the first album is extremely hard to find, and it's got a 3D album cover like a baseball card.
Do you shell out big money for collector's items like that?
No, I would for that one, but not really. And then my dad was a musician back in the day. He's older now, and I have a little shack in Mississippi, just a getaway place. And the only thing that's in there is a turntable and a set of BBC studio monitors. And he gave me his entire record collection from back in the day. So it's basically Waylon Jennings, Hound Dog Taylor, shit like that.
Far out.
So I got his old collection. So that's really fun stuff to listen to in Mississippi in a shack in the middle of nowhere.
And it was your dad's. You know, that even adds that whole other flavor of...
Yeah. And there's, I mean, he had a pretty cool... He played music back in the 60s, you know.
Like professionally, or was he...
Yeah. Turned into the 70s, he turned into one of those Waylon Jennings leather jacket, bearded mustache outlaw dudes.
Huh. I wonder where you got it.
Yeah. We talked about doing a record together. We're still talking about it, but we need to just get down and do it one day. We're going to call it Welcome to the Liars Club.
Oh, you need to do that. That would be fantastic. You know?
He still got pipes, man. He plays at church now more than anything, but yeah, he's got it.
Was he touring? Or did he do that? Did he tour, make his own records at all?
Back in the day they did, yeah. Not much, but, you know, regionally.
Is he on a record anywhere?
No. Never made a record. I took him to my buddy's studio and remastered a couple of them and gave them back to him on CD, and he flipped out. I play them called Lady Friends and shit.
Now, your name Pepper, was that a nickname, or is that your government name?
No, that's my real name. That's his name, too.
Oh, okay.
And my grandfather's name, blah, blah, blah.
So you're getting ready to come to Australia now. You know there's no Coors Light here, right?
I've heard that. I'm packing my suitcase as we speak. What the hell am I going to drink down there?
Oh, we'll take care of you, mate. Don't worry. There's plenty here.
Yeah. Last time I was there, I think I was drinking Strongbow or some shit. I actually found Strongbow. I can't remember. I'll figure it out. I'll be all right.
Yeah, you won't be poor with choices here. There's plenty.
Yeah. Problem is that I don't drink a lot. I just drink a long time.
Okay, well, then be careful, because some of the beers here have a very high alcohol content.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I like city cheap beer.
Yeah, you don't want to wake up with Sharpie all over your face.
No.
You're going to be playing Australia, New Zealand in early February, and then off to the UK in April. Europe in May, and then no doubt more dates to come. Are we going to see another Corrosion of Conformity record in the next couple of years?
We're at the point now where we're talking about it, if that makes any sense. We played everywhere we can fucking play.
Right.
We've much run out of places to play, so now it's either make a new record so we can go back out and play again, or don't. But we have some ideas, you know. All I need is enough ammunition to get motivated, you know. So yeah, we're getting there. It's a lot of work, man. I can tell you, to make records the way we try to do it and the caliber, you know, we don't just spit these things out, man. It takes a lot of, you know. Whenever you finish these damn things, you're always like, how in the hell did that just happen?
So are you guys going to be bringing vinyl to Australia to sell at the shows?
I wish we were. It might be a good question. I need to call Negro Blast and see if they got any of that. We do in the States. We sit there and sign them, too. Me and Woody hang out by the merch booth before we play. And just, yeah. I would like to do that. Thank you for reminding me. I'm going to make a comment right now.
No worries. All right. So, Pepper, I'm getting ready to wrap it up. Is there anything you want to talk about we haven't spoke about?
No, man, just that we're super psyched to get down there. And I said before, you know, being from New Orleans and going through disasters like Hurricane Katrina, I kind of get what you guys are digging and stepping in right now, you know, and I wish you all the best. You know, I know it's not easy. It seems like, you know, it's never going to end, but hopefully, you know, it'll come through and you guys will be back to living as one thing, you know, without this over your head.
I know it's tough.
Oh, appreciate it, man. You know, it's interesting because here in Australia, and I'm sure it's this way around the world, but yeah, this issue has come up, this disaster's come up, but the country really unites and comes together around it. Now there's some concerts going on to raise funds. There's all sorts of different things. So you see the community really come together, and that's I think the sense of a culture is how they react during a disaster like this. And so it is very heartwarming to see that happen.
Yeah, that's great. That's what you need. And I mean, just from my experience, you know, sometimes when you get in a situation like that, you literally have to rely on the kindness and strength of people you don't know.
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. And that's how things evolve and become a better society in the long run.
Well, I am happy to report that this weekend we have rain scheduled for the next several days.
That's what I heard. And where are you right now?
I'm in Sydney. I'm not that close to the fire action. That's a couple hours. It was up here in December, and now it's down south, more towards Canberra and Melbourne.
Man, it's terrible. I hate that. I'm watching it on the news here. It just gives me goosebumps of watching, you know, Katrina shit and like it's like PTSD shit. Just seeing something so enormous, can't do fucking anything about it. You know, it's like, ugh.
I can imagine a billion animals. Can you imagine that? A billion animals.
That's beyond. It's awful.
Anyway.
Well, hopefully, I told the promoter, is anything we got a couple of days off in Sydney, and is anything we can do to lend a hand or whatever? Cause, you know, I'm not good at sitting around and shit like that going on. You know, whatever. I don't care. Shoveling ashes. You know, who cares?
Well, look, man, we do appreciate it. And you just coming down and just kind of bringing your music and bringing happiness to people is great. And if you're drinking a lot of beer and then, you know,
let's just drink some beer and listen, rock out to heavy metal and have a good time for a little bit. You know?
You got it. So okay. Thanks again, Pepper. We're looking forward to it. Corrosion of Conformity, Auckland, Adelaide, Perth, Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney. Anyone who listens to this, if you go to the Sydney Crowbar Show, send me a DM and I'll buy you a beer. For any other tour dates, go to coc.com. Again, Pepper, thanks for coming on the Vinyl Guide.
Absolutely, buddy. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
There we go, Mr. Pepper Keenan of Corrosion of Conformity and Down. And let me remind our Australian New Zealand friends, check out Corrosion of Conformity as they're down here in our neck of the woods early in the month of February. Auckland, Perth, Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney. Tickets at silverbacktouring.com.au. They haven't been down here for about 6 years, so catch them now because you don't know when they're going to come back. Also, check out Corrosion of Conformity's latest album, No Cross, No Crown, available at nuclearblast.de. There's a sale going on right now, at least while I'm saying this. Their vinyl is on sale. I'm going to be putting that link in the episode page. Grab a copy before it goes back up or becomes unavailable. That's Corrosion of Conformity, No Cross, No Crown, at nuclearblast.de. And that's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to share these episodes on social media. Tweet them out. Tell your friends about them. And there are over 200 episodes now in our back catalog, interviews, talk about vinyl records, and more, all at thevinylguide.com or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back with a brand new episode soon. So until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.